This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
4-1 last night to clinch this series 4-1. The Caps are on to the second round for the first time in 7 years. Waiting for them, the Carolina Hurricanes. Greg Wyshynski is the senior NHL writer at ESPN, and he joins us right now at Wyshynski on X on Twitter, W-Y-S-H-Y-N-S-K-I. By the way, last night he had the over in the Blues-Jets game, and it hit. I just was scrolling through your timeline of the last 24 hours, and that game went 5-3. I believe that's 8. That's over 5.5. Winner. Do you get asked to do a lot of that for ESPN Bet?
Yeah, you know, I've been doing that show since it started when it was Daily Wager. I'm kind of their hockey guy. It's changed a little bit because I used to be more explicit with with my picks, but since ESPN has its own sports book now, there's like some rules for insiders giving picks and stuff. So I've had to kind of like talk about it in a more nuanced way, but that does allow me to say, hey, I do believe the Jets and Blues will probably score at least 6 goals combined. and then we can take that information as it was. But it was interesting last night, the theory from the host on the show where, well, Connor Hellebuck's going to have a bounce back game. And I'm like, well, his bounce back game is still going to probably be a couple goals on the board. So I still expected it to be a high-scoring game last night, and it was.
Actually, that's interesting that you said that. So are for ESPN Bet, the sides, you know, teams rather than totals, that's frowned on right now because it shows some sort of bias? Or are most of these on-air wagers or on social media wagers? I'm not following it. I don't use ESPN Bet, and I'm sure it's great, but is that how it works with most of you guys who are on air and people know?
It's got nothing to do with bias, or it's got nothing to do with like you casting your lot for one team or another, because we do that before every playoff.
Sure.
I mean, like, you can go.
That's what I was
Lord knows, you know, Florida Panthers fans have screenshotted my pick of the Lightning in 7 this morning and sent it my way on Twitter. So it's not about bias. I mean, I it's well above my pay grade, but I just know that, you know, there is a discouraging of making like specific wagers, I guess, after ESPN Bet came online. Gotcha. And it's kind of just been that way since. It doesn't bother me either way. I go on that show to have some fun and share some information, whether it's like injury reports or my own insight. And, in all honesty, it's made my life easier when we used to do Daily Wager, and I would go on there and be like, I like so and such on the puck line. I felt a lot of pressure to be right because I knew that people were going to take my advice because they thought they know, you know, that I at least have a tangential knowledge of the sport. So it made my life a little bit easier to know that.
Sometimes that's dangerous.
Yeah,
I think we've all learned over the years, sometimes too much information actually can work against you. But anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So it's made my life a little bit easier to not have to actually like go on there and be like, plant my flag on a pick or something.
Right. All right, let's talk Caps. Why did they win and win fairly easily in 5 games?
They were the better team. They were the deeper team. They were the more experienced team. They were the team with the better goaltending. I mean, pick your answer. I respect that Montreal managed to not be the team that fell down flat on its face at the end of the season in the Eastern Conference like everyone else around the bubble did. And got in. I think it's going to really help their young players to have had this experience. But they were like, what, a minus 21 or 22 in goal differential? I mean, they weren't a very good hockey team. So the Capitals should have made quick work of them. They did make quick work of them. And I found it interesting that, you know, the one thing that wasn't really working for the Caps in the series did work really well last night, which was their power play. It was 1-10 coming into game 5. And now, as we look ahead to the Carolina series, things get really interesting vis-a-vis what that power play does for the Capitals and how good Carolina is in preventing power play goals.
Before we get to Carolina, you mentioned goaltending. Just how good was Logan Thompson in this series? I know what his save percentage is. I can look at that. But, you know, beyond the being able to quantify it, he just seemed to make incredible timely saves as well. How would you describe his performance in the 5 games?
Well, miraculous in the sense that when he was injured, I thought he was cooked for the series, maybe for the playoffs. Like, that guy might be Wolverine with his healing abilities, because, like, I did not expect to see him again against Montreal the way he came off the ice. But, again, didn't miss a beat, came back in next game, and then we see what he did. It's what he's done at the peak of his powers during the regular season, being the great last line of defense, making good saves. Playing within himself, and there's no doubt that the way that he's played, and I'm not trying to shortchange Lindgren too, he's a good goalie too, but both of them have given this Capitals team the foundation on which they can build a lot of other great things this season. He was really good, but you mentioned something about him making timely saves, and I think that's pretty much the story of the series for me, which is, you know, there's always that tension for the Capitals when they're really good and they're playing someone not as good in the playoffs. even with the Cup, there's that psychological baggage and damage from those years of playoff disappointments. And the most impressive thing for me about the Capitals, and I think Thompson's a part of this, is not giving any oxygen whatsoever to a Montreal upset bid. They win game 1 in overtime on the Ovi goal. They go to Montreal. They maybe have a little trouble spot here and there, but ultimately they win game 4 and kind of shut down any panic points in a way that, let's say, the Toronto Maple Leafs can't, to use that example. I was just really impressed with the efficiency of the Capitals and more than anything, their ability to not even give the Canadiens a sniff of a potential upset in the series. It was really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there was one moment, and that is, you know, Montreal led in the third period 2-1 in game 4 with, you know, a chance to even up the series, and Wilson's hit really was significant. It led to the game tying goal, and the Caps went on to win that game. But it's interesting because you understand it, you've lived it, you've covered it. And I was going to ask you to talk about that in this context. I think we would all feel, and you would feel, had the series been 2-2, that Game 5 would have been one of those tension Caps games where it's like, oh my God, they're at home, are they going to blow it? Yet many of the players on that team never experienced that, and the coach has never experienced that. So would it have mattered?
Of course it would have mattered. Because the fans have experienced it, and they're the ones who create the atmosphere in the arena. I mean, there's a reason the Toronto Maple Leafs haven't won the Stanley Cup since 1967. It's not because Mitch Marner was on that 68 team. It's because you have fans that follow the Leafs generationally that have had the trauma of playoff disappointments. So even though the Capitals have a Stanley Cup banner in the rafters, the feelings that are left over from Game 7 losses, to the Rangers and the blowing the Montreal series with Yaroslav Halak and those Penguins series, like, all of that still lingers in the back of the minds. Those ghosts still exist inside the arena. And when, you know, when things aren't going right for the Capitals in a playoff series, they bubble back up to the surface. So even if the players aren't a part of it, they'll feel it, because anyone who's been in the arena during one of those series where things aren't going well, or all of a sudden they aren't meeting expectations, you can literally, like, feel it in the air.
It's so true. And I talked a lot about that going into the series. I think I even talked to you about it before the series began. And, you know, there was kind of this, what do they need to do, you know, since they haven't done anything in 7 years? They haven't won a series since the year they won the Cup. And I think now that they've gotten through this first round and did it impressively in a season that's going to be memorable, right, Greg, for Ovi number one, number two, you know, exceeding expectations wildly with respect to their regular season. And now I think they're in the clear. Now I think it's icing on the cake because they're actually an underdog in this next series. Do you agree with that?
Do I agree that they're an underdog or do I agree that
no,
they're
no, do you agree that, now that everybody can exhale and they've accomplished, you know, they've gotten past the point in which people would have just absolutely eviscerated them. They got into this second round for the first time in 7 years. And if they lose to Carolina, people will understand because they're playing a team that's actually, you know, favored.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think the baseline for the Capitals in this phase of the franchise was always relevancy. And, you know, we've talked before, me and you, about the difference between what the Capitals did to surround Ovechkin with a playoff quality team and what the Penguins didn't do in surrounding their core with the same kind of team. And so while the Penguins are flopping and flailing and parting ways with their coach and wondering what the next phase is going to be, not only do the Capitals have a playoff team on their hands and one that I think is going to play in the conference final, and that's a spoil my pick or anything. But also one that has given us a nod to the future in the way that Protas has played, in the way that McMichael has played, in seeing Ryan Leonard. Like we're getting a vibe of, you know, Ovechkin has captured the record. He probably has another year left at the, you know, maybe two at the most. But now you can be confident that things are progressing in a positive way post Ovechkin. And, you know, if they push through and play for a championship, that's awesome. But like you said, I think the first round playoff win just adds to the proof of concept about where the franchise is headed.
Yeah, I mean, you started that, and we have talked about this, about Pittsburgh not surrounding Crosby and the Caps doing a better job of surrounding Ovechkin. These are two franchises that have stood side by side with two superstar players, you know, in an era that's, you know, been almost defined by those two players. And even though they've got three cups and the Caps have one, it seems to me that what you're saying is the Caps actually are better at roster construction.
At this point, for sure. I mean, and you know, maybe not in the height, the apex of the rivalry and the apex of the Penguins' time as a contender, where they did a really good job of building out their bottom six and bringing on people like Phil Kessel and others that really did make a difference on that team. But, you know, you've got to give the Caps their credit for having that sense of transition and having the pipeline from Hershey and having the management team in place to identify players that they've bought low on and that have really, you know, flourished, like Strome, or, you know, now you're seeing Dubois and Chychrun kind of do the same thing. Like it's been really impressive to see how they've been able to maintain success while the Penguins And the Blackhawks, too. I think you could put them in there as well as, you know, another team that was sort of dynastic at the same time as Pittsburgh was, had to really, you know, either you have one team that's scratching and clawing and trying to stay relevant in the face of what should be a rebuild, and then another team in Chicago that had to go into a complete rebuild, and the Capitals haven't.
All right, let's talk about the next series. You didn't have to spoil it, but you did, and that's fine. But why do you like the Caps to beat Carolina?
I think the Caps' cohesion is incredible. I love the vibe of the team. I love the fact that they are getting contributions from throughout their lineup. And I think that for the second straight series, with due respect to Freddie Anderson and what he's able to do when he's healthy and when he's in the lineup, I think the Capitals have a goaltending advantage in this series. I'm not trying to poo-poo Carolina. Like, Carolina could win the cup if things go right for them. They're a very sound team with players that can make a difference offensively, and their special teams are pretty great, especially their penalty kill. I watched them in every game against the Devils, though, and left very unimpressed. I look at the Capitals and I look at the Carolina Hurricanes, and this is a manageable matchup for Washington. This is not a distinct disadvantage. They are not a deep underdog. I think the way the Caps are playing right now, and like you said, getting through the series with Montreal and feeling a little bit of confidence, I think they're going to play for a conference championship. Now, I think they're going to lose to whoever comes out of the Atlantic, but I do think that they're going to get past Carolina.
So who will come out of the Atlantic?
Florida. I mean, I picked the Lightning because they had played really well in the regular season, and I figured this collection of Lightning players was going to be able to match the Panthers' depth, and I thought Vasilevsky was going to be a big difference in the series. And, you know, they're still Florida, man. They're just great. They are the team right now. They are the team to beat. Their core group of players can beat you offensively or punch you in the mouth. The augmentations they've made to the roster, like Brad Marchand, our old friend Nate Schmidt, like all those guys have worked out great. Bobrovsky does what you need him to do in the playoffs and big spots. Like, they're just really well built, and they're playing with a confidence right now that is extremely rare in this sport to have for three consecutive seasons. But I mean, they punched Tampa in the mouth, and Tampa staggered and didn't know what to do, and, you know, relegated Nikita Kucherov to one assist and four losses, which is, I mean, insane. So it's Florida. I'd be shocked if it wasn't Florida.
So you like Florida and the Caps in the Eastern Conference Final, with Florida advancing to try to defend the cup they won last year. The West, you've got four incredibly competitive series. We've got four game sixes. What's stood out West?
The Dallas-Colorado series was always the one that I thought was the most interesting, and it's remained that way. I'm shocked that we're where we are in the Dallas series. Like, I picked Dallas to win the series because I picked Dallas to win the cup. So if I'm going to look smart, then I got to ride that train. But I didn't think that without Miro Heiskanen and without Jason Robertson, they'd win the series, let alone have a chance to eliminate Colorado in game six. And if you're Colorado, with all of the augmentations you made to your roster, whether it's blowing up your goaltending for Mackenzie Blackwood or, you know, acquiring Brock Nelson and Ryan Lindgren and Charlie Coyle at the trade deadline, getting your captain Gabe Landeskog back for the first time since you lifted the cup, and that emotional moment, like, all of those things should mean that you're going to win this series. But at this moment, it's precarious. And Dallas has the momentum. They had the advantage. And in game five, they had something that they hadn't had previously in the series, despite playing that, you know, that well, which was their star players flexing and making a difference and hitting the score sheet. So it's dangerous times for Colorado, which was a team that I think a lot of people thought would advance from the series. And if they advanced from the series, thought they could win the cup.
Thank you, as always. It's fun to talk to you about this stuff. Appreciate it, and hopefully there's more opportunities to talk Caps over the next month or so. Greg, appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Greg Wyshynski, everybody, ESPN's senior NHL writer. He likes the Caps to beat the Carolina Hurricanes. That series starts Monday night at Capital One Arena. All right, next. Do you agree with me that Nick Chubb would be worthy to pursue? More on that next if you want to weigh in, 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now, and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The revolution redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because, like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.